Now for our reflection on September 11th. We thought first of turning to writer Paul Auster, who's been on this program often in the last 2 years because of the National Story Project, Your Lives in Your Own Words. You may also know him as a writer of movies and fiction, including the recent novel Timbuktu. Paul Auster suggested that we also ask Salman Rushdie, the Indian-born writer who's perhaps best known for The Satanic Verses, the book that forced him into hiding for several years. His most recent novel is called Fury. Paul Auster is a dyed-in-the-wool New Yorker. Salman Rushdie lives there now. Both men, who are friends, join us from our New York bureau. Welcome to both of you.
Hi.
Hi, thank you.
Now, I'd like to start with something personal. I'd like to just ask you, by way of setting the stage, where you were on September 11th last year. Let's start with you, Paul Auster.
I was at home in Brooklyn. It happened to be the first day of high school for our then 14-year-old daughter. And she had switched schools and was going to Manhattan on the subway alone for the first time in her life. And I walked her to the subway at about 7:15, 7:30, nervous just about that train ride that she was about to take. Then I walked home to my house in Brooklyn and actually witnessed the events right from the window on the top floor of our house. We panicked about our daughter, first of all. And once we made sure that she had made it safely to school, we settled in to the horrible business that I think everybody in America settled into, which was to watch television. And of course, the wind was blowing towards Brooklyn that day. So within a few hours, the entire neighborhood was inundated with smoke and this horrible stench of incinerated bodies and burning plastic and computers and wires. And it was a smell that I'll never forget as long as I live.
Salman Rushdie, what about you?
Well, as it happens, I wasn't in New York. I was in the middle of a book tour, and I had actually spent the night of September the 10th in Houston, Texas, doing a reading. And I was supposed to do a radio interview on the morning of September the 11th. And before the radio interview was due, the producer rang me in my hotel room and said, look, I'm terribly sorry, but because of what's happening in New York, we are joining the local coverage and we won't be able to do the interview. I didn't have my TV on, so I said, what's happening in New York? And he said, switch on your television. So I switched on the television and about 30 seconds later saw the second plane hit the second tower. The odd thing is that while one watched television that day, I found it impossible to sit down. I thought it was somehow disrespectful to sit in front of the television while watching these things. And I found myself standing in front of the TV for hour after hour after hour while these images burned themselves into the mind.
What about the fall and winter and spring that followed 9/11? Did you all find that it helped to process everything that had happened, to do anything in particular, to gather with friends, to read things, go to movies? I mean, what did you do?
Well, I think the answer to that question, in my view, is storytelling. It was interesting to me, as somebody whose job is storytelling, that it was a moment when everybody seemed to need to tell the story of that day from their point of view. And for what seemed like weeks and months, people told their story. And everywhere you went, you had stories being offered up against other stories, and the sum total of those stories seemed to be the meaning of the event. I mean, it's not just therapeutic, you know, they seem to be a way of comprehending the event.
Salman Rushdie, let me ask you about something that you wrote about some time ago. In Midnight's Children, you talked about the partition of Pakistan from India as a transformative moment for millions of people. That it a line was drawn at that moment, to borrow the title of your new book. Was this such a moment, do you think?
Yes, I think it probably was. And I think for two reasons. One is because it showed us that the world no longer has safe frontiers, that frontiers have become permeable, that the borders of things are things that can be passed through, that there is no safe place. I think in a wider sense, what happened that day was, you could put it this way, that it was that broke our picture of the world. You know, there's a we all construct for ourselves a picture of how things are, you know, how the world is, what is so and what is not so, what is possible and not possible, and we live inside that picture, and that's in a way what we call sanity. And what happened that day is the unimaginable happened, the unthinkable happened, the thing that you would never have believed could happen became a fact. And what it did is it meant that we all had to throw away everything we thought about everything and think it out again. And it is a little bit like being deranged, because suddenly the world has no shape and you have to make a new shape for yourself. And I think that's what we've been all in our own ways and collectively trying to do in the last year.
A phrase from Wallace Stevens comes back to me now as we're talking, and he one of our great poets, a man of the imagination par excellence. And yet, in one of his notebooks, he wrote, "In the face of extraordinary actuality, consciousness takes the place of imagination." And I think that's our duty right now as writers, as citizens, as ordinary people in the world, to be as clear as we possibly can about what's happening and not lie to ourselves, but really try to understand all the ramifications of everything that's going on.
Yeah, and it's something none of us can do by ourselves. So it's an act which is not just an individual act, it's also a collective act. It's something we have to do together, share our little scraps of understanding with each other and try and add them up into a new picture of the world.
Exactly.
Now, the two of you have written extraordinary fiction. And I think many people believe that that fiction is a way to explain, a way to understand, that sometimes just reportage or even history can't quite match.
Yeah, but fiction is slow. You know, fiction doesn't happen the next week.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. When do you think it's going to be possible to tell those kinds of stories?
I have no idea. I mean, it could be next week. You know, it could be next week. We just don't know what all the writers in the world are doing right now. I think every one of us, I suspect, has been thinking since September 11, what the hell do we do about this?
On the other hand, if you look back historically, the greatest trauma probably the United States ever suffered was the Civil War. And that lasted for 4 years. And the best book, The Red Badge of Courage, was written many, many years after. So it's impossible to know what genius or what hack is going to come up with something in the future. But it's hard to imagine anything coming very soon.
I'm sure there are dreadful novels about Osama bin Laden being written right now. And they will be the usual, how can I say this, airport novel. but in terms of literature, you know, for instance, War and Peace is written, I mean, what, 30, 40 years after the events it describes?
At least.
More than that.
No, almost 50.
50 years, yeah. And yet, you know, there is no better account of those historical events, of Napoleon's invasion of Russia and so on. You can't say when it'll happen, but my guess would be that it won't be anytime soon. What I think it will do is to filter into books in much more oblique ways. This sense of uncertainty, the sense of the world being broken and needing to be renewed, all these things that we've been talking about.
Some of the greatest art about a particular time is told obliquely. I would say that no writer better captures the sense of dread that followed World War II than Samuel Beckett. And not once in any of his work does he refer to the Second World War or anything that happened then. And yet he captured that spirit of anxiety of the nuclear age, we might say. So it's too early to tell.
Any particular writers, any particular works, current or past, that you wanted to read or look at again?
I was reading the old writers again. I went back to Montaigne, my favorite, a source of great inspiration and consolation and an image of humanity that I find very, very engaging and important. Kierkegaard, even, who asks only the most important questions, I turned back to him. And at the same time, I felt a great urge, almost a need, to look at old American comedies. And there was a...
You mean movies?
Movies, yes. A moment when, maybe only a week after September 11th, my wife and I sat down and watched Sullivan's Travels, the old Preston Sturges film, which is a beautiful film about movies and about telling stories and about the importance of laughter in the world. And I think we both found it to be a great medicine. And it cheered me up immensely. It gave me a sense of the fullness of the world, that life hadn't ended. We were just in a black moment, but things maybe were going to get better.
Yeah, it's interesting. We seem to have done not quite the same thing, but something similar. I mean, I also found myself going back to the best writers rather than the most recent. And reading, for instance, I remember reading a lot of Auden poetry. You know, that wonderful poem about poetry, which ends, "In the prison of his days, teach the free man how to praise." I thought that was something that we needed to know, though I needed to know at that time. But I also found, again, as a recent arrival in America, a need to connect to the everyday beauty of American life. So I found myself, you know, watching a lot of baseball. I found myself listening to a lot of, you know, rock and roll music. I found myself almost as a kind of deliberate act going to, you know, eat a Nathan's hot dog. I wanted to remember that there is much to celebrate, and that the thing that we now find ourselves obliged to defend is worth defending, not just because of power, not just because of death or money, but because this is a rich life. And the richness of life was something that I felt the need to just plunge my hands into right up to the elbows.
Salman Rushdie's most recent publication is a book of essays called Step Across This Line. Paul Auster is the author most recently of The Book of Illusions. Gentlemen, thank you so much.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you for having us.